Can we talk about other captains, Eric? How about Don Rutherford?
Yeah, Don was the first man to really, he was a thinking fullback and captain. And I think he always had this ambition to become first ever England coach, what he was called technical administrator to the rugby union, which was really coaching the coaches. That was later on. I think he used Gloucester as a bit of a guinea pig because he tried a lot of these innovations with us. There was the Indian foul trick from a penalty, a set penalty, where you had 1, 2 and 3, there was booting at the passing the ball. Terry Hobson would be at number one, there'd be me in the centre and number two, and there'd be Rutherford at the fullback, number three. And we used to practice this time after time. If it was one, Terry Hobson would go right. If it was two, it would pass to me and I'd go left. And if it was three, it would be Don Rutherford and he'd drop a goal. But in practice, it nearly always turned out to be number three because Don always wanted to drop the goals. And then with the forwards, he had this innovation to take the scrum right back into the middle of the pitch. But this required someone who could throw the ball in pretty accurately because it's a long way to go, especially in some of the wet grounds we played in, the conditions we played in. And it certainly made the opposition think, but it made us think a bit hard as well. It wasn't entirely successful, but Don was the first one to demand everyone attended training prior to the Saturday game, because initially training was a bit lackadaisical and you should just stand around the old stove afterwards and have a jar or two and generally mull over the last Saturday's game. But he introduced a fitness regime, got a bit of circuit training going, and all these innovations on the pitch, tactically as well.
How often do you used to train? Was that twice a week?
Yes. Yeah. Well, until floodlights were introduced, of course, we only played Saturday rugby in the winter. That's after the clocks went back. But with the introduction of floodlights, Doug Dorr was indefatigable fixture secretary, and there was a Midland Floodlit Alliance set up, and suddenly we were playing 60 games a season, which involved a lot of midweek games, naturally.
You used to play Leicester and Cheltenham and Moseley 3 times a year.
That's right. Yeah, there was this Midland Floodlit Alliance, as well as the two, the home and away normal fixtures. So I remember, we had over 60 games on the fixture list, which for an amateur side, when you've got to go to work next day, it's quite hectic, really.
Yeah, I was looking, during those 2 years of Mike Nicholls' captaincy, you played 90 games for the club. That's a phenomenal number.
Yes.
Yeah, how did you stay intact? For 46 games one season and 44 the next.
Yeah.
That's an incredible number of games.
I don't know, really. I know it interfered with cricket, but I'd prefer to play rugby naturally, when I was still at Gloucester. It's just a question of luck, in a way, I guess. We didn't have helmets or mouth guards. The most serious injury I had was I got concussions from being kicked in the mouth at Upper Vale. I split my lip and the stitches went bad. So that kept me out of it. Was anything that kept me out of the game for more than a week or two.
After Don Rutherford's captaincy, I think it was Dick Smith who was captain after that. Talk about Dick as captain.
Well, again, Dick used to work long hours at 40. He started about 3 in the morning, I think. Did all his buying down at Bristol Fruit Market. And he used to appear at training that night with bags under his eyes. And but he led by example. He was still always the quickest on the field, as I say. He was he really led from the front. Tactically, Rutherford was still there. He was still an influence, I think. But Dick had a season, and
Oh, so the training regime that Don Rutherford had set up carried on.
Yes, but we didn't, not having a coach. The captain was coach and policy maker in all but name. And he just did what he wanted. Because I think the first official coach he had was Keith Richardson, but he'd had the theory from Loughborough Colleges, I believe. He was a physical training college, so he seemed to be the obvious man to take on that role and relieve the captain a little. Because things were always reasonably successful because every other club didn't do any more than we did. But I think we were being outpaced a lot by the younger clubs in the tactics and fitness regimes that were set up in those other clubs. I mean, Bath springs to mind. I never finished up on the losing game against Bath until right at the end of my playing career, and Bath had really got their act together tactically and fitness wise, I think.
And then Mike Nichols came along as captain, I think.
He had a do or die attitude. He was a brilliant hooker. If he couldn't get the ball with his foot, it was claimed he used to hook it with his nose, but he certainly did his job well in the middle of the front row, and he's got an intimidatory character.
Do you say that about the opposition or towards you?
Intimidatory. Well, both really, I think, mainly to the opposition. He got concussed from time to time, and Mick Booth used to say to me, more than once, he said, we should have had this crouch, touch, engage, whatever it business then, I think, because he maintained that Nick would deliberately try and headbutt his opponent number. He wouldn't go for the gap with his head. He'd try to nut him on the way down. So there'd always be this clash of heads as they engage.
And so did he believe in getting you a bit worked up before you left the dressing room?
Oh yes, he was the first one to really, you know, instead of having a warm up just holding hands around the stove, he really get the studs drumming on the floor sprinting on the spot, that type of thing.
I think you could feel it in the stand, quite
yeah.
honestly. The attitude came across, you know,
right.
during those 2 years.
Mm.
Really did.
Yeah. And then after Mike, I think you played under John Baylis.
Yes. Yeah, John, unfortunately, under John's captaincy, it was the only time I ever got sent off because he played at Leicester. He always played them on the Thursday before Bonfire Night. And that was, I think we were quite dominant really against Leicester, but on that occasion, things weren't going quite to plan. And John said, oh, come on, we've got to better rough him up. And the ref came to him, and unknown to me, he gave the final warning, and the next visit, next personal foul, the man would be sent off. And unfortunately, John didn't tell me, not that it should have made any difference, but I had an up and under and tried to catch this Robin Money with the ball, but he just got his kick in first, and I followed on and collided with him. He went down screaming to the ref, and the ref sent me off. He said, oh, I've got no alternative because that's the next foul. And they had all this straw on the pitch to protect it for the Barbarians match they always had on Boxing Day, and they used to look after the ground, you know, months beforehand. So I went and sat on this pile of straw, and then the ref made a big scene about saying, when I mean off, I mean right off the pitch. He even put that in his report. So I got a 2-week ban, which in those days was 4 matches. But I think we had a particularly hard winter, and all the matches in that period were frosted off, so I didn't miss a game anyway. But that was just one thing I remember about John. John was a very confrontational type of centre. He took delight in playing havoc with the bigger the name, the more aggressive he was. And remember we played Harlequins here, and they had two England centres, Rusher and Lloyd, and he was knocking them all over the place whether they had the ball or not. So they also had a tough winger, John Coker, was a I think he's Nigerian Olympic boxing champion, and he came in from the wing and body checked John. I think the crowd gave a collective sigh of relief when he got up, because he knocked all the wind out. Well, I thought he'd done some serious injury. How he continued, I don't know. But
I remember John Coker. He was huge, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, yeah.
Thundering down
peculiar
the wing
style,
the
style of running, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. He ran like a boxer.
Yeah, but he was still quick.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Big man, though.